Open to Isaiah chapter 58. So our subject is the Christian Sabbath, and the way we're going to think about this is the first lecture, we're going to think about what the Sabbath is, and then the second lecture, we're going to think about the Sabbath defended. In other words, we're going to look at the arguments against Sabbath observance in the New Covenant, and then we're going to look biblically at the refutations of those arguments. But our key text will be Isaiah 58, verses 13 and 14. If you turn back your foot from the Sabbath, from doing your pleasure on my holy day, and call the Sabbath a delight, and the holy day of the Lord honorable, if you honor it, not going your own ways or seeking your own pleasure or talking idly, then you shall take delight in the Lord, and I will make you ride on the heights of the earth. I will feed you with the heritage of Jacob your father, for the mouth of the Lord has spoken. We're going to come back around to that passage at the end of this lecture and think about the wonderful promises that there are for us in the Sabbath day. But what I want to do is just walk through and be answering that question, what is the Sabbath day? What does Sabbath mean? Let's start with that definition. What does Sabbath mean? Joe?
Rest.
Yeah, the word Sabbath means rest. It comes from a Hebrew word that means to rest or to cease. So first of all, what is the Sabbath? The Sabbath is a holy day. It's a holy day. Exodus 20, verses 8 and 11. Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. Therefore, the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and made it holy. When the Lord underscores the Sabbath commandment again in Exodus 31, you shall keep the Sabbath because it is holy for you. And so we see right away, this is a holy day. Now that then raises the question, what does holy mean?
Set apart.
So it's a day that God has set apart as special. And if you read the creation account, God blessed man. And the very first thing after he blesses man, the very first thing he blesses after that is he blesses the Sabbath and calls it holy. And so it's a fundamental principle that God has taken one day in seven and he has set it apart and made it special for us. When we think of holiness, we usually think of like moral purity, but that's the idea of being set apart or separate. That's really the core meaning of the Hebrew word. And so we have a holy day given to us as a holy people to help us be more holy. A holy day for a holy people to help us be more holy. And if you think about the idea of holiness, this idea of separation, and what's interesting, Shane, do you remember what are the three words in Hebrew for holy, sanctified, and saint? I'm just taking an opportunity to humiliate you. Kadesh? Anyway, I've humiliated him enough. The point is, when you read in the scriptures the word holy, sanctified, or saint, those words are all related together. This is something that is at the core of being a follower of Christ, that we are separated. He has separated us and made us different. And so this Sabbath principle embodies this idea of holiness. And so when you gather on that holy day and you separate yourself from your normal activities, you're separated from something. What are you separated from on the Sabbath? Your normal work, the normal stuff you do. You separate yourself from that, but it's more than that. Do you separate yourself then to another kind of activity? Did we just do nothing yesterday? We gather together and worship. So we're separated from something and separated to something. And when you think about your holiness and what God calls you to be holy, that means you're separated from and you're separated to. Too often we forget that second part. We're to be separate from sin, separate from the world, but it's more than that. You're separated to devotion unto the Lord, to obedience to Him, to union and communion with Him. And the Sabbath day helps us to do that. It reminds us that we are a separate people. We're called out of the world one day in seven. Shane, are you stretching, or do you want to say something?
Oh, I was going to say, if you guys take a moment when you're reading Exodus and Leviticus, I think mainly then, but also Numbers and Deuteronomy, and look at all those things that God sets apart as holy. When you look at, like, when the Lord sets the oil, the anointing oil apart, He says, this is holy, set apart, not to go in a glass case, but it's for God's purpose. When you have the table of showbread, it's holy, but not, like, to put in a glass case, for a purpose. The tabernacle is holy for a purpose, and the people of God are holy to be sanctified, I mean, to be set apart for God's purpose. So every time you look, every time God calls something holy, He takes it from, like, in a sense, you might say, a worldly, normal purpose, and He says it's His to be used for His purpose. And it's a very easy study in English, even, right?
Yeah. So, and we're separated from then and to an activity. And so, our rest on the Sabbath day is not the rest of inactivity. Any of you? Yeah, Luke. No. Yes, you are.
Technically, always worshiping.
Right.
That's our life.
Mm-hmm.
So when you go to the Sabbath, to the way, big W worship, are we completely changing to a totally different type of worship, or are we just highlighting the other worship?
Okay, I see what you're saying. We're just highlighting. We're doing what we're always called to do, but God calls us to set aside all of those other things that are good. I mean, our normal work is good in and of itself, but to set that aside and to give ourselves completely to worshiping Him. Chris?
Sir, did you say the holy, sanctified, and sanctified person in Hebrew?
All the words are related. It's the same in Greek, actually, too. Like, if you looked quickly at the Greek, it'd be tough to tell them apart, and the same thing in the Hebrew. Yeah.
And actually, holy is a noun, and sanctified is the is the verb form of that noun. Is that like to be, to make holy?
And saint is a saint. Being a saint is kind of a personalized noun of that. And I think we'll come upon, I think it's in Exodus 31, where the Lord says, sanctify yourselves and be holy, for I, the Lord, sanctify you. There's almost this rhythmic flow in the Hebrew where if you read it, it almost, you're saying those words again and again in some form or another. Okay, let me go ahead and press on here. So the Sabbath embodies this principle of holiness. We're going to expand on this as we move on. And it reminds us that we're distinct as God's people, that we're not like the rest of the world. We're called apart one day in seven. Second, the Sabbath is a creation ordinance. It's a creation ordinance. And I'll have more to say on this in our second lecture. But in other words, the Sabbath was something that was instituted at creation. And have you ever noticed when God gives this command again at Mount Sinai, that creation emphasis is there again. So listen to Genesis 2, 2 and 3. And on the seventh day, God finished His work that He had done, and He rested, or literally in the Hebrew, He sabbathed on the seventh day from all his work that he had done. So God blessed the seventh day, made it holy, because on it God rested from all his work that he had done in creation. And so the Sabbath was something that was instituted at the creation of the world. It wasn't just instituted at Sinai, but when God's people came to Mount Sinai, the Sabbath had been part of their life and their practice since the creation of the world. Now listen again to when it shows up in the Ten Commandments. Listen to the creation emphasis. For in 6 days the Lord made the heaven and the earth, the sea, and all that is in them, and rested on the seventh day. Therefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and made it holy. And then it's interesting, after the Lord gives the Ten Commandments, and all the priesthood and everything is instituted, in Exodus 31, the Sabbath commandment is again, it's underscored, which tells us it's important for us. And again, listen to the creation emphasis. Exodus 31:17. It is a sign forever between me and the people of Israel that in 6 days the Lord made heaven and earth, and on the seventh day he rested and was refreshed. Now, why is it significant to understand that the Sabbath has its roots in creation? There's no one right answer. I'm going to make you do more push-ups. Shane, they were all able to do push-ups so everyone can go. Caleb can. Why is it important for us to understand that the Sabbath has its roots in creation? Luke? Luke, why don't you just speak up a bit? You have good things to say. We want to hear you. Underscoring the importance of it. God creates man, and then he institutes the Sabbath. Right. So it was a pre-fall ordinance.
Maybe because it's like a creation ordinance, it's not something that's just limited to the Old Testament.
Exactly. Yep. Exactly. Because it's rooted in creation, it's not just something that we can say, well, that was just rooted in the law of Moses, and therefore it has no relevance for us. It was instituted long before Mount Sinai. One of the things I don't think we'll get to, but if you want to make yourself a note to ask me, one of the things I'm not going to cover is why the day has changed. But this is important to understand, that understanding that the Sabbath is a creation ordinance, we see that it's connected to the covenant. And we'll talk about that a bit, but that helps us understand why the day has changed. So it has its roots in creation, and the point I want you to get here is that here we have God setting down a pattern for life. He worked, and then he rested. And as his image bearers, we're to follow that example. We're to bear his image. And one of the very ordinary ways that we can bear his image is working 6 days and resting on one day. And so the Sabbath affords us an opportunity for Christ-likeness or image-bearing. It's a weekly opportunity to bear God's image, to become more like him as we rest from our labors. Now, we rest in a different way that God did. God didn't rest because he needed to. He rested because he set down a pattern for us to follow. So we work 6 days and then we rest one day, and we rest in his finished work. And I think what's helpful as well, understanding that the Sabbath is rooted in creation, is I think you'll all realize this as you get older. We're just prone to forget our creatureliness. In other words, we're prone to forget that we are dependent on our Creator. We kind of think, it's easy to start thinking we have things figured out. And the Sabbath day calls us apart and reminds us that we are creatures and God is our Creator and we need Him. So the Sabbath is a creation ordinance. Thirdly, it proclaims God's redemptive power. His redemptive power. And if I could give you another word, another synonymous word, it proclaims God's recreative power. His recreative power. What do we mean when we talk about redemption? What is redemption? Decker, what's redemption?
Fixing something that was lost or like saving something that's in
trouble. Right? Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the word literally means to buy something back, to reclaim it. And so, well, the Sabbath is connected to creation, and as Lily noted, it was a pre-fall ordinance. We know that mankind fell into sin, and we're now sinners. And so after the fall, the Sabbath takes on this redemptive focus. Listen to Deuteronomy 5:15. You shall remember that you were a slave in the land of Egypt, and that the Lord brought you out from there with a mighty hand and an outstretched arm. Therefore, the Lord your God commanded you to keep the Sabbath day. And so, what does the Lord mention there? What event does he mention? What's he talking about? You shall remember what? That you were a slave in Egypt. So that's a reference to the Exodus. That's the central redemptive act that God performed in the Old Testament that pointed, that foreshadowed the greater redemptive act of Christ. The slavery from sin and death. And so just as there was the first creation, there's now the recreation of sinners in Christ. The Sabbath points us back to God's finished work of creation, but it also points to Christ's finished work at the cross. We rest from our work on the Lord's Day to remember that we have rested in the finished work of Jesus. And I don't want to jump too far ahead, but that again explains the change of the day. It embodies this gospel principle where we don't work to obtain our rest. We don't work to obtain God's favor. We obtain God's favor and rest by His grace, and then we work. And that's why our holy day is first at the beginning of the week. We rest first in the grace of Christ, and then we go out and work. And so there's a gospel principle there. So fourthly, you get your pens ready. The Sabbath is an eschatological sign. An eschatological sign. E-S-C-H-A-T-O, logical. It's an eschatological sign. Anyone want to take a stab at defining that? Lucy?
Doesn't eschatology, isn't it the study of end times?
Yes. Study of end times or the last things. And it's simply, you know, we've talked about ecclesiology, epistemology. Now we're talking about eschatology. In John chapter 6, Jesus talks about how he will raise us up on the last day. And that word last in the Greek is the word eschatos. So it having to do with the last things, the end things. And what I want you to grasp here is just because something is out here in the future, that doesn't mean that it doesn't have relevance for us now. Eschatology is relevant for you now. Listen to Hebrews chapter 4, verses 8 to 11. For if Joshua had given them rest, God would not have spoken of another day later on. So then, there remains a Sabbath rest for the people of God. For whoever has entered God's rest has also rested from his works as God did from his. Let us therefore strive to enter that rest, that no one may fall by the same sort of disobedience. So the Sabbath, it's a present reality. There's blessing for us in the present, but it also points to an end. It's an eschatological sign pointing to the eternal rest that we will have at the last day. Shane, are you raising your hand? Okay. Now, when we gather on the Lord's Day, we really do. We experience real rest, real refreshment from Christ Himself. But ultimately, the Sabbath is pointing you to your eternal rest, wherein, based on Christ's righteousness and His finished work, that you will enter into a final eternal rest. And that's why the writer to the Hebrews says there remains a Sabbath rest for the people of God. And we'll look at that more in the next lecture, but the Greek literally reads, there remains a Sabbath keeping for the people of God. In other words, as long as there's something out there that we haven't yet entered into, there remains a Sabbath keeping here on earth. Think of the days of creation. How does in Genesis you read the, you know, and there was we read the 6 days of creation. What happens? What do we read at the end of every one of those days? It was good before that. Before that, and there was. There was evening and morning on the first day. There was evening and morning on the second day. Does anybody know what day doesn't have that designation? Yes. The Sabbath day. It's striking. Every day you have this rhythmic pattern. There was morning and evening on the first day, and morning and evening on the second day. You get to the Sabbath day, and it doesn't say that. Any guesses why? Exactly. It's signaling that there is this eternal rest that we have in God. Okay, let me pause there. I know I'm going kind of fast. Shane, are you stretching your latissimus dorsi?
That's an amazing point, and I have never recognized it.
What I was getting at is because on the Sabbath day in the Genesis account, there, it doesn't say there was morning and evening. It's signaling that there is this eternal rest. And so we gather one day in seven, but that ultimately points to something greater, an eternal rest. It's this eschatological sign pointing to that eternal rest. Let me just read what I have here. As an eschatological sign, it enables us to look beyond our present troubles to heaven. It's very practical in that way. You guys, as you grow older, you'll quickly learn how hard life is. You're going to be plagued by troubles in this life. You're going to see wicked people prosper while Christians struggle to get through life. And what the Sabbath does, it helps us place things in perspective. In it, we get a clear picture of God and his creational and redemptive work, and it points us then to that end point. Here's what Joseph Piper writes in his book called The Lord's Day. He says, and think about this, what he says in light of where we're going in a few hours. The Lord's Day towers like a mountain over our present existence. From its height, we can have an eternal perspective. In other words, the Sabbath is like this vantage point, and the language in Isaiah 58 is very much like the Sabbath is a mountaintop experience. It's a vantage point from which we can see our eschatos, our end point, our eternal rest. It gives us perspective. We come out of the troubles and the struggles of this life, and we can see the eternal rest that God has for us. And so think about that when we summit some of these peaks and you're able just to see forever. That's the imagery that's used to describe the Sabbath day. Shane. I wasn't, but you can mention it.
So in Hebrews 12, the apostle in Hebrews is arguing about why we don't want to go back to the typical Old Covenant, or Old Testament. We want to worship in the New Covenant, part of the covenant of grace. And he says, because we have come to the, when we gather, we have come to the heavenly Jerusalem, okay, to Christ, whose blood speaks better than the blood of Abel. And so at the high point of our worship, we need to realize when we rest on the Lord's Day, that the Christian, the Sabbath has been changed with the resurrection of Christ, we actually get a taste of heaven.
Yeah, and so what Shane's getting at too is this is New Covenant worship being described. And again, listen to the language, but you have come to Mount Zion, city of the living God. And so here again is that mountain experience. And I think that's, Shane, was it Dr. Pruto that would use the imagery of the Sabbath and the church being an outpost or an embassy of heaven? Anybody know what an embassy is? If you went to the U.S. embassy is there a U.S. embassy in China? If you went to a U.S. embassy in China and you went into the U.S. embassy, where officially would you be? On U.S. soil. And that's what the Sabbath day is. It's an embassy of heaven on earth. We come to worship on the Sabbath day. We are in an outpost of heaven. We're in a little mini heaven on earth. That's the language some of the Puritans use. They called the Sabbath day a mini heaven.
I don't know what questions you guys are asking about your life, but I suspect that as you start making your own decisions, having friends outside of your home or even your church, the Sabbath can become like a drag, right? I mean, especially if you like run out of milk on Saturday and you get to go get some and then you want some tea with milk in it on the Lord's Day or something, or you forgot to do your homework or something. The thing is, you need to see that you taste that eternal rest. You taste heaven, just to be very dramatic and radical, every Sabbath. And if you want to know, why do I have to go to church? Why do I need to spend time with the people of God resting? It's because you need it, and you get to experience heaven every week to sustain you the rest of your life.
And that segues into the next point, because we're going to talk about why sometimes... we really don't feel like we, if the Sabbath day is an outpost of heaven, why do we feel like it just does nothing for us sometimes? So that leads us to number five, and that is the Sabbath day is covenantal. It's covenantal. If you want to jot a little note, something to ask us while we're in the woods. So I talked about the Sabbath being creational, and that means it's connected to covenant. It's connected at creation with the covenant of works. Just make a note on that. Connected with the covenant of works at creation, but the Sabbath day now is a perpetual sign of the covenant of grace. Listen to the covenantal language in Exodus 31. You are to speak to the people of Israel and say, "Above all, you shall keep my Sabbaths, for this is a sign between me and you." That's covenant language. "A sign between me and you throughout your generations, that you may know that I, the Lord, sanctify you. Therefore, the people of Israel shall keep the Sabbath, observing the Sabbath throughout their generations as a covenant forever. It is a sign forever between me and the people of Israel that in 6 days God made the heaven and the earth, and on the seventh day he rested and was refreshed." And so in being covenantal, the Sabbath is intertwined with our relationship with God. And that is why the Sabbath very often, not very often, all the time, is where the rubber meets the road, as it were. And what I mean by that is how we view the Sabbath, what we think about the Sabbath, what we do on the Sabbath, that is a litmus test of your relationship with Christ. Because it's so intertwined in our covenant relationship with him, and because God, as our King, says, "I want you to set this one day aside," it's a very tangible claim on our lives. Are you going to acknowledge the lordship of Jesus over your time? And so the Sabbath, how we look at it, will be a litmus test of where we are in our relationship with Christ. And so part of the Sabbath being an eschatological sign is that it's also a sign of the covenant. Now let's think about that question. Why, if the Sabbath is so great, if it's this mini heaven on earth, why do so many Christians experience nothing on the Sabbath? And I've heard Christians say, "I kept the Sabbath, it did nothing for me." And they completely reject it. Well, this is what happens when we fail to look past the sign to the reality. What are some other signs that the Lord gives us in the new covenant? Baptism, the Lord's Supper. What happens if you approach the Lord's Supper? You know, the bread and the wine are covenant signs of a greater reality. What's a sign do? You know, you see a sign on the road. What's the sign designed to do? To point you to something else. You see a sign for Denver, you know that there's the city out there somewhere. And so if you come to the Lord's Supper and you fail to look past the sign to the reality, if you don't come with faith, you're going to get nothing out of the Lord's Supper. You're going to get a cheap piece of bread and a sip of cheap wine, and that's it. And we can do the same thing with the Sabbath day. It's a covenant sign, and if we fail to look past the sign to the reality, we won't benefit from it. We walk by faith in this life and not by sight. And so you need to approach this Sabbath day, this covenant sign, with faith, that you might see the spiritual reality behind it. The Sabbath day is designed to proclaim to you the relationship that you have with Jesus. It's Jesus in his grace saying, come to me, that I want to be with you. I want you to be with me. It's where he assures us of his love. It's designed to point us to a living relationship. And so we need the eyes of faith to see past the sign to the reality. Now why do we need signs like this? Why does God give us signs like this? And the illustration that I always use is my wedding ring is super dangerous. You see that? That's just a piece of surgical steel. It's been folded back and it's got this little lip. And I've gotten this caught on stuff and almost lost my finger. And so when I mountain bike, when I go to the gym, I take it off and I forget about it. And my wife teases me. She's like, you better put that on. You're going to forget you're married. Now, it's a joke because I'm not going to forget that I'm married because I don't have this on. My memory's just not that short. But I would submit to you that when it comes to the covenant of grace, when it comes to the gospel and your need for Christ, our memories are that short. That we so quickly forget our relationship with Jesus. That we so quickly drift from him, that we need this weekly sign to remind us that we are in a living and vital relationship with him. That he has saved us by his grace, that he has covered our sins by his blood, that he's sanctifying us and giving us all that we need. We need that reminder week after week after week. And that's why this is the rhythm of life that God has set down for us. Sixthly, the Sabbath is a means of grace. And we'll conclude with this. It's a means of grace. We've already had a lecture on the means of grace. So what are the means of grace?
Can I be really bad and back up on that topic?
Sure.
Okay. Jason and I, interestingly, over the past 2 years, have had a similar conversation as we sought advice about path shepherding people. And here's one thing that happens. When people stop going to worship minimally, but also resting on the Sabbath, they begin to act like the world, which isn't the worst part. What happens is they begin to feel distant from Christ. And, well, what happens first is they feel distant. Well, they don't realize it. They feel distance from the church. But then what they don't realize is that's really distance from Christ. And so they feel more like they're a citizen of the world because they've ignored that regular meeting with Christ and his people every Sabbath day and regular resting in them. And it really psychologically, but in a spiritual sense, messes with your mind and with your identity. And so I just urge you to think about the covenant nature of the Sabbath. We could tell you, if you said, hey, I'm going to start doing this other thing on the Lord's Day, I'm just going to start going to the evening service, or if you start not embracing the Sabbath, we can tell you what's going to happen. And I'm willing to say I'm about 90% correct, that eventually you're going to feel distant from Christ. You're going to start questioning your salvation. You're going to question, like, all of the gospel itself because you distance yourself from tasting of it and experiencing Christ and resting in Christ and communing with Christ. And so it doesn't seem that important now, especially for most of you whose parents have you are pretty much Sabbatarian. I mean, they embrace the Sabbath. But as you start having to make your own decisions, college, career, whatever, and if you start neglecting it, the Sabbath, it's going to sneak up on you, and all of a sudden, you're going to come to a spiritual crisis in your life.
Yeah, and I would echo what Shane said. We can almost, in fact, I had said to someone who had stopped going to worship basically the same thing. Here's what's going to happen. And inevitably and sadly, it did happen. And to drive this home a bit more, I know at least two people who have been on this TFB trip, two people who are no longer part of the church. And so don't think that this can't happen to you. Don't think that you won't be tempted in this way. And Josiah's dad is an elder with me down in Springs, and we often talk about how even when you're away from worship for legitimate reasons, his dad travels a lot. I was out of worship a few weeks when I had back surgery about a year ago. Even when you're away from worship for legitimate reasons, there's something weird that happens. It's hard to get back. And I talk to so many people, they're like, yeah, I want to go back to church, but it's hard. It seems weird. It's like, you need to force yourself to feel weird and go back and let the Lord remind you again of who you are and what he's done for you. Shane, any other comments on that? Okay, I'm sorry. I'm trying to move through this quickly here. So the Sabbath, lastly, it's a means of grace. It's a day that contributes to our sanctification. Exodus 31:13, the Lord says we're to observe the Sabbath, this covenant sign, and listen to the reason he gives, that you may know that I, the Lord, sanctify you. And so just like the sign of the Lord's Supper is designed to bring about growth and grace, the Sabbath promises spiritual growth through the grace of Christ, that you may know that I, the Lord, sanctify you. And in Isaiah 58, God promises that if we keep the Lord's day holy, then we're going to delight in him and experience spiritual victory and prosperity. Do you have a quote from Joseph Piper in your outline? So, the Sabbath, it's a covenant sign, it's a means of grace whereby we grow and conquer sin. And here's that quote from Joseph Piper, and if I could give you one book if you're interested in reading more on the Lord's Day, his book, The Lord's Day, would be a great read. He said, "The day is designed to contribute to our growth. For on this day, the Lord gives us worship, teaching, preaching, and fellowship. He grants us time to turn aside from the other demands and preoccupations to read, study, and pray. He frees us so we can serve him and our neighbor." So the Lord gave us the Sabbath really to make us more like the Lord of the Sabbath, Jesus Christ. You remember Pastor Friedley making that same point? You know, we become what we worship, and so as a means of grace, it's designed to cause us to love Jesus more than we do, to increase our love for our brothers and our sisters. Shane, how are we with time? I don't even know what time I started.
You probably have 2 more minutes.
It's 5 till.
Probably have 15 more minutes.
Okay.
How long is
okay, it's shorter.
So 15 minutes.
Okay. Yeah, Chris.
You can tell me about
the
question.
Sure.
You said something really striking, at least to me. Would you repeat what you said, Isaiah 58 teaches us about the Sabbath? You said something about how he promises to that we would love him, that we would grow. Can you
Sure. So I'm going to get into this in more detail in a moment, but I said a few things. The Lord's Day will help us to delight in the Lord, to experience spiritual prosperity and victory, that it's a means of grace whereby we grow and conquer sin, that it's designed to cause us to love Jesus more and to increase our love for our brothers and our sisters. Do you remember the key phrase in Isaiah 58? And why don't we all turn back there? We're going to end on this. Just call the Sabbath a delight. That's what I want us to think about. This is our hope for you, that you'll come to call the Sabbath a delight. And the question is, how do we truly make the Sabbath a delight and not a burden? Because that's the constant struggle, is we tend to feel like it's a burden. How do we really call it a delight? And so I want to give you four, I think, practical things from Isaiah 58 that will, I think, help us to call the Sabbath a delight. So first of all, this is all coming from Isaiah 58. First of all, you need to observe the designation. Observe the designation. And if you look at the opening words from verse 13 of Isaiah 58, if you turn back your foot from the Sabbath, and then he calls it my holy day. Here's a picture of something that is special and set apart. And this is familiar language. This would have brought to mind that event when Moses had approached God at the burning bush. And from the bush in Exodus 3:5, God spoke and said, and you can finish what God said, "Do not come near, take your sandals off your feet, because place on which you are standing is
holy ground."
This is similar language. Moses couldn't just walk on that ground like he did in other places. It was holy ground. It was set apart. It belonged to God. And that is the designation here with the Sabbath in Isaiah 58. It's a holy day. You can't treat it like any other day. The Lord has placed a fence around the Lord's Day, something special, something unique. It means it's not to be trampled on. It's a holy day, and so we need to begin by recognizing that. That God has given the Sabbath to us, and he's given it this special designation. Secondly, embrace the paradox. Embrace the paradox. A paradox is an apparent contradiction. And so we want to think about how do we call the Sabbath a delight? How do we do that? And in verse 13, God says, "Keep from doing your own pleasure on my holy day." There's the paradox. You want to find joy and pleasure in the Lord's day? Stop doing stuff. Stop doing your own pleasure on my holy day. Now, that statement is not a reference to sinful pleasure, but things that are good and right, our work, our hobbies, our recreation, things that are permitted on other days. These, God says, set those aside on my holy day. Now, this completely cuts against the grain of how we think. It cuts against the grain of our hedonistic, pleasure-seeking culture. I mean, our hearts think the way to joy is to do what I want to do. But here's the paradox. God says, if you want to find deep joy in me and my day, embrace this paradox. Keep from doing your pleasure on my holy day. So to delight in the Lord, to call the Sabbath a delight, you need to embrace that apparent contradiction. Thirdly, cultivate the perspective. Cultivate the perspective. In other words, cultivate the perspective that the Sabbath is a positive thing. That it's a great blessing and gift from God to us. Our text says, we are to call the Sabbath a delight and the holy day of the Lord honorable. In other words, we can't fall into the trap of viewing the Sabbath day as a burden. It's not a burden, but it's a blessing. The Puritans had this term for the Sabbath, a market day for the soul. A market day for the soul. In other words, we can come to God's market and experience His blessings. And it's this imagery that's used in Isaiah 55 where God says to people who are poor and needy and heavy laden, people who have no money, come to my market and take whatever you need. Here's what he says. Come everyone who thirsts. Come everyone to the waters, and he who has no money, come buy and eat. Come buy wine and milk without money and without price. Why do you spend your money for that which is not bread, and your labor for that which does not satisfy? Listen diligently to me and eat what is good. Delight yourselves in rich food. Incline your ear and come to me that your soul may live. So cultivate that perspective. And finally, believe the promises. Believe the promises. God promises us great things in the Sabbath day. Notice how Isaiah 58 ends. For the mouth of the Lord has spoken. That is the personal guarantee of King Jesus. This is what he says he will do for you on the Lord's Day. So first of all, he promises in verse 14 that you will learn to enjoy the Lord. You will learn to enjoy the Lord. Verse 14, then you shall take delight in the Lord. And the Hebrew word means that you will take exquisite delight in the Lord. And whether you guys have realized it or not, one of the great struggles in the Christian life is to find joy in the Lord. I mean, we're constantly seeking joy in other things, seeking joy in the wrong things. And it was this conflict that caused the psalmist to pray, turn my eyes from worthless things. We tend to seek joy in the wrong things. And the Lord Jesus Christ so graciously says to us, I know that you're prone to wander from me and seek joy in the things of this world. And so he gives us a day in which he promises to reorient our affections. He redirects our affections in the right direction, and he increases our love for him to bring us true and lasting joy. The second promise is that you will experience victory over sin. Listen again for the mountaintop kind of language. And I will make you ride on the heights of the earth. Well, that's an expression of spiritual victory. The commentator Alec Mottier says this. He says, this is a metaphorical expression for a glorious elevation of life. A metaphorical expression for a glorious elevation of life. Spiritual victory. Sanctification, greater holiness. These are the things that are promised to us on the Sabbath day. And friends, if you I'm going to hold that comment until my next lecture. Friends, God is at work on the Sabbath. He's at work in us. He's sanctifying us. He's bringing us blessing and healing. It's a means of grace in which he causes us to more and more die to sin and live to righteousness. If ever in your life you find yourself struggling with unrepentant, persistent sin, ask yourself, how am I approaching the Sabbath day? Am I approaching it with faith, coming to Christ expectantly, asking him to give the grace and the victory that he promises on this day? And finally, and most pointedly, we have the promise that you will be fed with or by Christ, the bread of life. You will be fed with or by Christ, the bread of life. In verse 14, we have this strange promise. I will feed you with the heritage of Jacob, your father. Now, I don't have time to take you through all the biblical passages, but if we think about the heritage or the inheritance of Jacob, that is simply Jesus Christ and everything that he has accomplished. This word heritage or inheritance is a rich covenant word in the Old Testament. Jesus is our inheritance. Psalm 119, we sang 119H last night, I think. The Lord himself is our portion. Numbers 18:20 says that the priestly inheritance is the Lord himself. And so the greatest thing that you get on the Sabbath day is Jesus himself. He is with us. He is feeding us, bringing us healing and spiritual nourishment. He's strengthening the brokenhearted, binding up the lame, humbling the proud. He is present. He's present on the Sabbath day in a special way. That one fact alone, that he is here, should cause us to see the Sabbath in a positive light.